Good afternoon, folks. It's another edition of the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. We're recording this on a Sunday afternoon, early Sunday evening, May the 4th. May the 4th be with you. Nah, that was corny. Let me stop. Preseason podcast of the year is back. I'm your host, Jay Hicks. Thank you for joining us. Anybody that's never listened to this podcast before, you know, we sit back, we rap about sports and hip-hop music. That's what we do. And we just try to be insightful and a little bit funny and that sort of thing, man. And thank you for sharing your day with us. I have a very special guest this evening. I may save a little bit of time at the end of the show to talk NBA playoffs, but I wanted to focus primarily, this podcast primarily on the NFL draft. We haven't had a chance to talk draft much as of yet. And so we have a very special guest joining us on the podcast. Before we get into that, though, again, hit up the website, hiphopsportsreport.com. Hit me on Twitter at HHSReport. And remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes as well. We're now on iTunes, so make sure you check us out there. Now, our guest this afternoon on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast, fantastic individual, wonderful man. He is a terrific cousin, brother, father, husband, anything you can imagine. I can say nothing but I speak the highest praise of this individual because I've looked up to him since I was a kid, and not just because we're related, which we are, but he's just a fantastic individual. You know, like I said, I can't say enough about him. But I'm very grateful for the opportunity to have this platform so I can introduce him to you all. So say hello to Mr. Mark Hicks. Mark, how you doing today?
What's up, cousin? How you feeling?
I'm doing really well, doing really well. Glad to have you finally on the podcast, the first of many. We'll get you on here quite a few times because, you know, my podcast is your podcast, you know. And as my brother Kenny said last week, you know, this is like home. You just come on into the refrigerator and go on and get you something to eat. You know what I'm saying? It's like that. There's few people that I trust more about the draft process in college football than you, especially given the fact that you're a lifelong Cleveland Browns fan, and this is our Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? The NFL draft is this is our time to shine because we don't get to shine in January like the good teams do. Unfortunately, this is our moment. Is the NFL draft and what should be April, but now is May. Thank you, NFL, for nothing. So I wanted to take some time to go over the NFL draft and talk a little bit about what's happening specifically at the top of the draft. Now, everybody does mock drafts. We've all seen websites that do mock drafts. And I actually, in my past radio career, which I used to host a football radio show back in college, and I actually took a crack at a mock draft one time and did one on the air. I think this was the year that Cam Newton was the number one pick. So I did this mock draft, and I went through the first 10 picks on the air and gave who I thought that I thought each team would select. I went through the first 10 picks, and I think I got maybe 2 picks right out of 10. And one of them was Cam Newton, number one, which is a slam dunk. And I think like the rest of the 8 picks or whatever I got wrong. So I'm just like, this is stupid. Mock drafts are so dumb, and there's no sense in trying to make sense of them. And everybody that attempts to do one, just know that either they're just winging it based on the team's needs, or they're using information that was falsely put out by teams to begin with, or agents to begin with. I mean, these people have a motive when they put out the information they put out, and so they're either deliberately trying to sabotage somebody's draft stock, or they're trying to, you know, lower the perception of somebody's draft stock in order so that that player will be available for them, you know, at an earlier point in the draft. I mean, there's motives behind all this shit. There's so many smoke screens, and it's just hard to get an understanding of what's real at this point. So what I decided to do was bring on my expert, Mark Hicks, to talk NFL draft. But instead of doing a mock draft, we're going to do a Mark draft. So we're going to do a draft that Mark would do based on each team's picking high in the draft if he were running the teams. So it's going to be if Mark is the GM of the Texans, who he would pick. If he were the GM of the Rams, what he would do at the number 2 spot, and so forth. So, and we're going to touch on a few other larger draft issues, but that's going to be the general premise for this show. So, Mark, are you ready to rock and roll?
Oh, I'm ready. First of all, just before we get started, I appreciate you bringing me on the podcast. I just want to let you know that I am a subscriber, and it's not just because, you know, your family and all, But I do enjoy what you do, and I want you to keep doing it. I think you're doing a fantastic job. Secondly, you're right about the whole thing, because I do mock draft. My season actually starts, you know, when the Browns start, you know, season starts going in the toilet, which is around November. So I start looking at the college football more intensely, trying to find out what their needs are, because by then you really pretty much know that the quarterback thinks, okay, we have no running game. You need another wide receiver besides Josh Gordon, so on and so forth. So as a lifelong Browns fan, my season actually starts in like late November, like right around Thanksgiving. So I actually start paying attention, close attention to what the Browns need, and I've been doing this for about as long as I can remember. I mean, and I have done mock drafts myself, and basically mock drafts are just pretty much a joke from the standpoint that, you know, you, like you said, you're getting information, false information most of the time when you create these mock drafts, and then a lot of times it's based on the needs and not necessarily what, you know, what the GMs are trying to look for, what they're trying to persuade or try to move around to get. So, in my personal opinion, you know, mock drafts are pretty much just opinions from everybody. And my thing is that some of the rankings of these individual players are just basically based off of mock drafts anyway, or the so-called experts like Kuiper and McShay and all these other so-called experts. We really don't know what they're talking about either. You know what I'm saying?
Well said. And that's all the more reason for us to have this mock draft. You know what I'm saying? Because we need to get some perspective on from an intelligent football mind as far as what these GMs should be doing or thinking, rather than just what we think that they're going to do, because that's pretty much impossible to predict. I think we know that by now. So without any further ado, let's start with the Houston Texans, number one overall pick. I don't think anybody expected Houston to be as bad as they were, and in full disclosure, I actually had the Texans going to the Super Bowl at the start of last season. And here they are with the number one pick in the draft, so you just never know what the football season's going to bring. But the Texans have the top pick. They have a need at quarterback. They let Matt Schaub go, and he's in Oakland now. We'll talk about the Raiders in a little bit. The Texans have some talent on this team. Obviously, they have talented skill position players. They have J.J. Watt at defensive end, who's one of the better defensive ends, if not the best defensive end in the business right now. But there's a lot of conjecture about as far as who the Texans should select or what they should do, or if they should try to look to trade out of this pick. So, Mark, you're the GM of the Houston Texans. The clock has started on Thursday night. You have the number one pick in the draft. What are you doing?
First thing I'm doing, if I'm the Texans, I'm looking at, there's a reason why I'm picking number one. And if you look at the season as a whole, it's primarily due to their quarterback play. Their quarterback play has been terrible. However, and I'm looking at their roster. Their roster is pretty stacked on both sides of the ball. But in this particular situation, with them having the number one pick, the first thing I would do if I was them, I would try to trade out. Just from the standpoint that there's not many holes to fill, per se, on that team. And I would be trying to cash in to try to get, you know, more chances to try to find the premier talent that I need. However, if I'm stuck at one, which more than likely I think they're going to do, if I'm them, I'm getting the best player on the board. Regardless of position, even though my primary need is quarterback, I'm getting the best player that I can in this draft. And if for that, and looking at this particular draft, the best player in this draft is Jadeveon Clowney. I'm taking him number one because I learned this a long time ago when actually from GMs themselves, when they sit down and they look at the draft as a whole. If I'm not taking a quarterback, I'm either getting somebody who can protect my quarterback or I'm getting somebody who's going to put pressure on my quarterback, one of the two. And in this particular case, there's no need for them to take an offensive lineman. I wouldn't be sold at the number one pick on taking any of these quarterbacks in this class, but I do believe that the best player in this draft is Jadeveon Clowney. So I'm going, and plus he feels a need because he's going to help put pressure on opposing quarterbacks, just like J.J. Watt is. So I would take Jadeveon Clowney at number one.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Mark, and specifically about the whole protecting of the quarterback versus rushing the quarterback thing. And we're going to get to philosophy in a little bit. So, but I'm glad that you did bring that up. But let me pick your brain about a few things here with this pick. Number one, you mentioned that there aren't a lot of holes to fill here, and that you want to get a high impact player. So if that's the case, why would you look to trade the pick at all? If why not take the best player available due to the fact that you don't have a ton of holes to fill because you have a talented team? Doesn't it make more sense to just go after the best player available and not worry about trading down? Because if you trade down, you're going to get more picks back, and that's great for a team that has multiple needs. But Houston's not that far off from being a playoff team. We know that. So if that's the case, why even consider trading down a pick to begin with? And number two, what about... Does Jadeveon Clowney, Jadeveon, I think is his name now. I think he came out and said, "Nah, call me Jadeveon." So we've been calling him Jadeveon for 2 years, and all of a sudden his name is Jadeveon. So Jadeveon Clowney, if that's the case, why? Or if you think he's a top player in the draft, does any of the flags with him scare you? The fact that people are questioning his work ethic, and he's a defensive end, pass rusher type of guy, and those guys are all about motor, you know. And if his motor is in question, is that something that you would be put off by? I mean, do you have a problem with that? Do you have a problem with the fact that he kind of maybe comes off like a prima donna, or that he kind of basically took all of last season off, let some people tell it, because he only had 3 sacks as a senior? Does any of this stuff scare you with Clowney?
It would, and that's a very good point that you made. It would if this was not a veteran ball club like Houston is. If he was on a team that was that had very little veteran leadership on that team, I would be very scared. But I think the fact that nobody's going to outwork somebody like J.J. Watt, and for him, that would be the best thing for him, is to be on a team with a guy who has a motor that never stops running. Because in that particular case, he's going to have to step his game up, and he's going to have to be more consistent to be on that team. And I think it's very easy when you're the best player on a team that really isn't very good. If you look at South Carolina, they really weren't a very good football team. And for him to be the best player on a team that really wasn't that good, and nobody really to push him, I think that speaks volumes as far as his ability to not have a consistent motor. If he's on a team like Houston, where he has J.J. Watt and he has other defensive players that's going to, this is for money now. Now you're trying to make it out of your rookie contract, and the best thing that the NFL could have done was slot the salary cap so that these guys don't make that much money in their rookie seasons. Now, if he wants to play for that second contract, he's going to have to go all out, and he's going to have to be in an environment where he has J.J. Watt in the same locker room as him on the other side of him. So he's going to push him. The reason why I would consider trading down is because the more picks that you have, the more opportunities that you have not to basically screw up your draft. Let's just say for whatever reason, Jadeveon Clowney is, or Jadeveon, whichever way you want to look at it, is a bust. You pretty much set up your entire roster for the next 5 to 6 years, because you're now trying to re-scramble and try to rebuild an area that you don't have any reason, or you should not have any reason to be rebuilding. With you drafting Clowney, your defensive line is set. You have two bookend outside linebackers / defensive end types that's going to put pressure on the quarterback, and it's particularly in that division where there's not, you know, besides the Colts, there's really not a very good quarterback in that division. So you're going to be putting up a ton of pressure on these quarterbacks to try to make plays. And that's why I think it's important if you're in a position like Houston where, you know, you can afford to trade down. You don't have to go out of the top 10. Maybe you can go down to maybe like 5 where Oakland is or something like that. You can still get an impact player at a good position, and, you know, you don't have to have pressure of trying to hit a home run with the number one pick. That's the only reason why I would consider trying to trade down. But even if I was to trade down, I wasn't going to trade down no further than 5, and definitely no further than the top 10.
Right. And I see that. And you're right about that, too, that, you know, if you get more swings in the batter's cage, you know what I'm saying, sooner or later you're going to connect with one. And even if you can't connect with Clowney for whatever reason, maybe he is a prima donna, maybe he gets hurt. but at least you have some options there afforded to you if you were to get another great player. Maybe not Jadeveon Clowney, but you still get another great player at 5 or 6 or something like that, and then you can still make the most of your draft. Moving on to the St. Louis Rams with the second pick. To me, they're the biggest wild card in this draft because they're not even supposed to be there. That's supposed to be the Washington Redskins pick, but they got that pick from the RG3 trade a couple of years ago. But they ended up giving it to St. Louis, and St. Louis's pick shot up to the top of the draft, and here they are sitting at number 2. I think the Rams were 8-8 last year, and they actually have a really good team, which is, you know, to some people surprised because they were in the most competitive division in the league last year. But the Rams were really good, and they have a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball, and they had a good draft recently. They got Zach Stacy late in that draft last year, I believe. They had the kid Ogletree, I think, that plays linebacker, and they paired him with Laronitis. They have Robert Quinn and Chris Long on the defensive end, and those two guys just wreak havoc constantly. I think Robert Quinn had about 18 sacks this past year, something like that. They have a pretty solid secondary, but I think they lost Cortland Finnegan in free agency, so they may be looking to do something there, but they have a pretty good team nonetheless. Now, the question may be on the offensive side of the ball with quarterback and Sam Bradford. Now, I was never a Sam Bradford guy. I was never a Sam Bradford fan because I felt like he was a product of the system in Oklahoma, and I wasn't really sold on his skills, and he's been very much hit and miss as a professional. And I think the Rams are in a really interesting situation, and I think they're the biggest wild card in the first round. But, Mark, if you're running the Rams, what do you do with the second pick?
Well, I agree with you that I've never been a huge Sam Bradford fan. However, I think the biggest problem with Sam Bradford has been his health. And in my opinion, the biggest problem with this team offensively has been their offensive line, and particularly their tackles. They have not had the ability to solidify their tackles properly with Sam Bradford under center. So, the primary needs for me, if I'm the GM of the Rams, I'm looking at safety because, like you said, secondary, their safety, their defensive backfield, their safety and their corners, with Cortland Finnegan not being there anymore. They did draft Janoris Jenkins. They do have him, and they have Tremaine Johnson. They have those two corners, but they still need depth at that position. Safety is a mess. They definitely need a safety there. But the fortunate part is because they made the RG3 trade, they have, you know, two picks. I'm using the first pick to solidify their biggest weakness, and that is at tackle. And of the two tackles, Greg Robinson from Auburn and Jake Matthews from Texas A&M, I'm going with the lineage. Personally, I'm going with Jake Matthews, not just because he's a Matthews, but most importantly, his dad played under Jeff Fisher, if you remember, when he was with Tennessee. You can't get a better idea of what this guy is going to be as far as an NFL pro than by watching him at practice and in the locker rooms with his dad and all this stuff growing up. To me, that's just like the perfect fit for him, and for him to start out probably at right tackle and eventually moving over to left or however they want to play it, he has the ability to play both ends. So with me, if I'm St. Louis, I'm taking Jake Matthews at number 2.
And that's a solid pick. I think most people believe that Jake Matthews is a very talented tackle. And like you said, that gene pool, man, you can't escape it. You're talking about Bruce Matthews. You're talking about Clay Matthews. You're talking about baby Clay Matthews. And now we have another Matthews. And these guys are all exceptional football players going back decades in the NFL. So it's hard to escape that lineage, as you mentioned. And that would be a solid pick for St. Louis. And you raise an interesting point about the Rams also having multiple picks because of the RG3 trade. Their own pick is actually 13th. So if they want to make an imprint on the offensive side of the ball or something like, or you know, with a skill position, I should say, or if they want to go defense and help repair that safety position or something like that, as you mentioned, I see a lot of the mocks that are out there have them looking at safety or possibly corner with the 13th pick, like a Calvin Pryor from Louisville or Ha Ha Clinton Dix from Alabama, something like that. But they can use this top pick on a Jake Matthews, who, again, as you mentioned, is a tackle, which is not a sexy position. And that tends to get fans a little bit antsy when you don't use a high pick like that on something that's more appealing to the fans. But I think you're afforded that ability when you have multiple picks, and which is kind of to your point from before. And so since you have a second first round pick, two picks in the top 13, and a pretty talented draft, unlike last year, you can afford to take a Jake Matthews at the top and then still get an impact player with the 13th pick. Moving on to the number three pick, Jacksonville Jaguars. Gus Bradley's the head coach, defensive guy. And they have needs all over the place. They have more needs than you can shake a stick at, you know what I'm saying? And the Jags were pretty awful last year. But they kind of turned it around towards the end of the year, which made it seem like that maybe Gus Bradley was not a bad hire after all. He was formerly the defensive coordinator of the Seattle Seahawks. Many people feel like he's going to try to emulate that same defense that he had in Seattle now down in Jacksonville. And if that's the case, you know, maybe he's looking for some type of defensive presence or some type of player that they can hang their hat on. They went pretty conservative last year and picked Luke Jokel, which was a tackle at the top of the draft with their pick last year. And he ended up breaking his ankle about halfway through the season. And so it was kind of a disappointing year for Jokel himself. And then if you look at back at a couple of years ago, their pick was Justin Blackmon. He has talent up the butt, you know what I'm saying? But Justin Blackmon can't stay out of trouble. And it's always something with him, and I don't even remember what his latest indiscretion was, but I think he might miss the majority of this upcoming season, if not the entire season, I think they said. So they definitely have needs on the offensive side of the ball. They lost Maurice Jones-Drew, who was pretty much the face of their franchise. They got rid of Blaine Gabbert, who was maybe 3 years ago was their top 10 or top 12 pick at quarterback. They threw him out the way, and so now Chad Henne's like looking like their starter unless they draft the quarterback maybe near the top of the draft. So there's a lot of different ways the Jags can go. If you're running Jacksonville, what do you do, Mark?
Going back to what you just said, and I believe if I'm not mistaken, and you're right about Justin Blackmon, I want to say he's gone for at least 8 games next year. With that being said, you need somebody. With Gus Bradley, I think he did a pretty good job last year considering the lack of talent on that football team. I think they, you know, that was just a heartbreaker when they beat the Browns last year. It was by all means, probably one of the most ridiculous games that I've watched last year. But if you're looking at their team as a whole, yes, they do have a need for quarterback. They do need outside linebacker. They need free safety. They need a whole bunch of different weapons. But my primary needs are quarterback and outside linebacker. In my opinion, the best outside linebacker is Khalil Mack. Now, this is the wild card for me as looking after the entire draft. So from an outside linebacker standpoint, Khalil Mack would be a perfect fit for them. However, for the purposes of this mock draft, there's nothing that this team – I need a spark. I need something that's going to shock the world, so to speak, and make them notice Jacksonville. At this particular point, the only thing about Jacksonville that's attractive is for like 80-year-old people who want to retire. That's the only thing that's good about Jacksonville. So at this particular point, for me, if I'm the GM of the Jaguars, I'm going to get something or somebody that's going to try to make the biggest splash that I can to attract the necessary free agents, maybe, or just to get somebody or get the blood going or pumping down in Jacksonville. So for me, at number three, I'm taking at quarterback for Jacksonville Jaguars. I'm taking Johnny Manziel from Texas A&M.
Johnny football. This is what the people came to see, Mark. This is what they came to hear. Oh man, where do we begin with this guy? Let me just say this: I am a Johnny fan, and I've written about Johnny on the website before. I think Johnny is hip hop to the fullest. I think he's like the white Allen Iverson, basically, at quarterback, you know, like out of Bethel High School, you know what I'm saying? Like, this is basically who Johnny is, and I love his rock star aura. I do. I'm a fan of his. And being from Cleveland, we're an underdog city. We're an underdog city full of underdog people, and we tend to root for the underdogs. We tend to root for the people that everybody else count out because everybody counts out Cleveland, you know? And my brother, Kenneth Hicks, who was on the show last week, basically, he's in private conversations, he's expressed to me that he wants the Browns to go after Johnny Manziel for that same reason, because he's an underdog and he would fit with the city. He's an underdog because of his size. In case you don't know, Manziel is not even 6 feet tall, maybe weighs 205 pounds soaking wet. And so he's not a very big guy. The prototypical NFL quarterback is probably about 6'4", 230, you know what I'm saying? And so, or 220 at least. So Manziel is not, but for what he lacks in his size and his frame, he more than makes up for in guile and spirit and intangibles. And in addition to that, he's a pretty damn good quarterback too. I think he's got a solid arm. I don't think his arm won't blow you away, but I think he's got a very solid arm. I think he's accurate enough, and I think that can be improved with practice over time if you put him with the right system and the right coaching. And I feel like his escapability in the pocket, I feel like is second to none as far as what we've seen in the draft in recent years. Maybe since Kaepernick came in a few years ago, we haven't seen a quarterback that possessed this ability to run out of the pocket and to make plays out of the pocket, either throwing on the run or with his legs. And I mean, if you told me, there's a lot of people that are anti-Johnny. If you told me that I would get 16 games a season out of Manziel, then I think that he's head and shoulders above just about every other quarterback in this draft, with the exception of maybe Teddy Bridgewater. But I think everybody else, I think he's a cut above them because of his playmaking ability inside and outside of the pocket, and for what he brings to the locker room. Any team that gets this kid, I think they're going to be ecstatic. They're going to be excited to come to work. They're going to be excited to go to practice. They're going to be excited for mini camp. They're going to be excited for camp in July. They're going to be excited for the preseason because, as you said, he's going to inject pure adrenaline and excitement to any fan base that selects him. Now, Jacksonville had the opportunity to do something similar with Tim Tebow a few years ago, the hometown kid, but they passed on Tebow. And most people would agree that from a skill standpoint, Tim Tebow is maybe not up to snuff, but I don't think that same notion exists with Johnny Manziel. So I'm a big fan of Johnny, and I think that he'll be successful in the NFL if he can stay healthy and if he stops trying to run through tacklers, which is what he did quite a bit of in the SEC. Mark, are you a fan of Johnny Manziel, and do you think he'll succeed in the NFL?
Well, to answer your second part of your question first, you know, like the old saying, style makes fighters. Well, systems makes quarterbacks, in my opinion. I think if you put the proper system around Manziel and you get a good enough talent base around him where he doesn't have to be the savior of the offense, I think he can succeed. However, me personally, I'm not the biggest Johnny fan out there. And some of the reasons that you brought up as far as, and that has nothing to do with his size. I think his arm strength is adequate enough to make the throws that's necessary. But I think just his style of play, it doesn't fit everybody's system. And in most of the offenses around the NFL, you have to get really creative with a guy like Manziel. And I don't think that most offensive coordinators want to get too creative. They want to get, you know, they want to be nuts and bolts. They want to try to, you know, get your particular, not necessarily average, but your customary quarterback to fit their system. I don't think Johnny Manziel can fit everybody's system. So when you take this guy, you have to have a system that benefits or suits his skills. You can't put Johnny Manziel in a North Turner-like offense. You know what I'm saying? Where it's just down the field, you chucking it and, you know, staying in the pocket and you throwing down the field. That's not Johnny Manziel's game. So when you have to realize when you're drafting him, you have to build an actual offense that suits his skills. And I think that in Jacksonville, they have an opportunity to do that. Now, whether they do it or not, you know, that's up to them. But, you know, the whole marketability thing and just the fact that it will pump some type of energy, like you said, into that fan base and on that team, it's a necessary evil. He will bring more by just his presence being there than anybody else in this entire draft. And that would include Clowney if for whatever reason he fell to three. That's why I think it's imperative for Jacksonville, a city and a town that's, you know, that's had blackouts and had issues with just having people come to the games. And now you not just get the people in Jacksonville involved, you get an entire NFL community involved to watch this kid play. Now, and like I said, I'm not the biggest Johnny fan. I think in some incidents he's like an attraction. He's like the bearded lady at a circus. You know what I'm saying? He's got, you know, you watch him. You say, "Oh, this is a bearded lady at the circus." You know, all of a sudden, you know, you're going there, you're watching him. But then after like going there 3 and 4 times, you're like, oh, this girl needs, you know, a Gillette, you know, Pro Glide or something. You know, it's just like you realize that it's just a girl with a nappy beard on her face. So style is more than substance at times. In this particular case, you draft him on style, hoping that the substance will pay off and win. So it's not a bad thing if by drafting him, I think he will inject life in there. But that's the reason why I would draft him, because you know he needs to be in an environment where he can showcase his abilities. And in Jacksonville, where you know they need every bit of publicity and every bit of fanfare down there as possible, they're going to be forced to make an offense work around him. So that's why I would take him.
You know, everything that you said is pretty much dead on. Now, what I wonder though is, if in this scenario, if they're taking Johnny, then that means they're passing on Khalil Mack, who you said was the best outside linebacker in the draft. And again, you know, if Gus Bradley is looking at all to emulate that Seattle defense, he's going to need an anchor. He's going to need a pass rusher, somebody who can get into the backfield and wreak havoc, playing that Leo technique. You know what I'm saying? Playing that Leo pass rusher that he had in Seattle, whether it was Bruce Irvin or Chris Clemens or whoever. Now, Khalil Mack could have been that guy. But if you're talking about picking Johnny Manziel, that means that goes out the window, at least to get a player, an impact player like Khalil Mack. But again, Manziel will breathe life into a largely lifeless team, or so it appears. And I don't mean that as any disrespect, Jacksonville. So I don't want y'all coming down on me, because I've had, you know, interactions, negative ones with the Jacksonville fans before. Don't take this the wrong way. I'm just spitting the facts, okay? You guys have not, you guys have had blackouts. Your team isn't very good. You need help. You need to get on some primetime games, like Mark is saying. So Manziel would be able to do that, but that's a big roll of the dice. I mean, they need a face to that franchise. They certainly do, and Johnny would be that face, but that's certainly a big roll of the dice, considering, you know, I think beyond anything else is the injury thing. I don't think it's as much a talent thing with Johnny as, or even the, you know, some people have questions about his personal affairs and just the way he carries himself and conducts himself off the field. They think that he's kind of a wannabe pretty boy or whatever the case is. You know, he's maybe not focused on football, focused too much on the ladies, whatever the case may be. You know, he likes to drink and stuff like that, or he had a supposedly drinking problem. I think some of that stuff gets overblown, like he missed the Manning Passing Academy or whatever it was back in college. I don't care about any of that, as long as he can throw the damn football, personally. But you know, again, like you said, it's definitely a risk with Johnny. But I mean, I think Jacksonville's fan base would be very happy to have him, that's for sure. And it would be interesting. It's going to be interesting no matter where he goes. I think the bearded lady comparison is a little harsh, because that almost makes it sound like he can't play. But I know that's not what you meant by it, but I see the point. And so that brings us to our hometown team, the Cleveland Browns, with the 4th pick. The Browns, man, they actually, I don't want to say they don't have needs, because they definitely have needs, but they also have a fairly talented team. They've spent money in free agency, which is something that they have not done in recent years. And I think you have to tip your hat to Jimmy Haslam for that. Mark, I don't know how you feel about the free agent acquisitions that the Browns have made. But few teams have been busier than the Cleveland Browns, going out and getting Carlos Dansby to replace DeQuell Jackson in the middle on defense, going out and getting Dante Hittner to replace T.J. Ward at strong safety, going out and adding two wide receivers to a fairly young and inexperienced receiving core with Nate Burleson and Andre Hawkins, although Hawkins is pretty young too. But they went out and got a couple receivers there to add to Josh Gordon, who was the best receiver in the NFL last year, including Calvin Johnson. He was the best, Josh Gordon. And so I think the biggest thing with the Browns is obviously they need a quarterback. And they just went out and signed Vince Young and Tyler Thigpen, for whatever that's worth, to go with Trash Can Tanny. But Brian Hoyer is the big question mark with this team, because a lot of people feel like he could be the answer for the Browns at quarterback. And I got to shout out your brother, Vince, my other cousin, who was quick to point out to me in our own discussions that Brian Hoyer started 2 games for the Browns last year. or three games, I think. He left one of them injured in the first quarter, and Brandon Weeden took over and won the game. The other game, he started, he beat Cincinnati, and then the third game was against Minnesota, and he threw three picks in that game against Minnesota. So why is it that everybody believes that Brian Hoyer is all of a sudden the answer at quarterback? Now, under your scenario, to recap, Clowney goes one to Houston, Jake Matthews goes two to Jacksonville, and Johnny Manziel Jake Matthews goes to St. Louis at number two, and Manziel goes to Jacksonville at number three. So that means there's still other quarterbacks on the board. The Browns have been linked to Derek Carr. Browns GM Ray Farmer has, I think he likes Teddy Bridgewater, but Bridgewater's stock has been mysteriously sliding the last few weeks. And so while the Browns need a quarterback, they may not necessarily look to take one here. I don't know what they're going to do. They could look to trade the pick. I don't know. Mark, you're the GM of the Cleveland Browns. Tell us, what do the Browns do at number four?
All right. The thing that really irritates me about all of these so-called experts is I don't understand how somebody who before the NFL season ended, right after college football, after they crowned their national champion, and they sat there and they had all the underclassmen, everybody come out. They had Teddy Bridgewater as the pretty much not only the best quarterback coming out in this class, but the possibility of being the number one overall pick. And for me, the only thing that he's done between January and now is had a pro day. And because of one pro day, now they're talking about second round for him. They're talking about him being drafted late in the first, and he's not the and then they scrutinize this kid about how small his hands are. Never mind the fact that he passed, you know, for 3,800 yards last season, okay, at 70% completion percentage. And I don't care if he plays at Louisville. That, to me, that doesn't make any. I mean, if you can play quarterback, you can play quarterback. No, the Baltimore Ravens drafted Joe Flacco 18th overall in the draft out of Delaware. So don't give me that crap about the conference that he plays in, okay? So for me, these guys, and this is what really irritates me about these so-called experts, and they've been throwing coals on this kid ever since the season ended. In my opinion, I haven't seen anything or anybody who has been vilified more than Teddy Bridgewater over one stinking pro day. Now, on the flip side, they praise Johnny Manziel, and all he's done since January and the bowl victory has come in, and he's had a pro day. And all of a sudden now, his stock has risen all the way up now, even in my draft, that he's being picked third. To me, Teddy Bridgewater is the best quarterback in this draft. Hands down, he's been that way now. He's been consistently good for 3 years. There is no reason why he should not be the first quarterback taken off the board. But because of whatever reason, and you can blame ESPN, you can blame the McShays, and you can blame the Mel Kuypers of the world, but this kid's stock has dropped so far. But if you listen like I do to Ray Farmer's interviews and just all – he talked about everybody in particular, in depth in particular, except one player, and that is Teddy Bridgewater. I agree with you that he really likes this kid, and I would not be surprised if they, in turn, pick him on Thursday night. That would shock the world. I would not mind Derek Carr, but to me, if you're going to take a quarterback, which in the top five, which they have not done, since they came back since 1999 with Tim Couch, they've done the late in the first round. They've done the third rounders. They've done the free agents. They've done all this other stuff except taking a quarterback number one overall. This team desperately needs a quarterback that they can sit there and they can put in that position and let him earn the starting job and let him keep the starting job, and you lock that position up for 10 years. I'm not even going to say that they are just going to draft one quarterback. They may draft two quarterbacks because they have 10 picks this year. I'm taking Teddy Bridgewater, if I'm the Browns, at number four. And on a back end, Sammy Watkins would also be a possibility there. However, for me, because I'm the GM, I'm taking a quarterback because to me, it doesn't matter where you take the guy. If the guy is good, it's not going to matter. I mean, I can guarantee you now, you look over the draft where Tom Brady was picked, and he was, and you and I both love Tom Brady, okay? We're, a matter of fact, pretty much our entire family love Tom Brady. He was picked in the sixth round. I can guarantee you, if we remock that draft now, he will not be in the sixth round of anybody's draft. He will be in the top, he will top one or two of that particular draft. So, to me, it's all about getting a quarterback. It doesn't matter where you pick them, just as long as you get the best one. And in this particular case, Teddy Bridgewater is the best quarterback. And he would fit well on this team because there's a lot of attributes. The main thing that I look at is, from a quarterback standpoint, is accuracy. Accuracy, and the tangibles are very good. You know, are you a leader, and you can you rally a locker room and all that stuff? I get that. But if you can throw the ball with accuracy, to me, and it's not just a little 5-yard dink it does. I'm talking about can you do the post or can you read a defense and know that the safety's in the box and you need to change the play. He's a coach on the field, and of all these quarterbacks that's in here, him and Derek Carr to me are probably the most cerebral quarterbacks that's in this draft. And if I'm going to take a quarterback, I'm taking the best quarterback. And in this case, it's Teddy Bridgewater.
You make a very strong case, and there's so much to touch on there. I don't even know where to begin because, I mean, again, this is our team. This is the Browns, and there's so many different ways we can go with this. First of all, I would applaud you with that pick, and I would be, as a Browns fan, taking off my objective helmet for a second, just as a Browns fan, I would be very, very happy with Teddy Bridgewater as my starting quarterback come Thursday night if they decide to make that selection. I think that Ray Farmer has made it a point to not talk a ton about Teddy of late, and I think that means that he probably likes him. I think I'm of the school of thought that everything that you hear about every team and every leak, every source, every nugget of information that comes out about every team, I believe the exact opposite. So if the Browns come out, which when Ray Farmer had a press conference last week, and he went on and on talking about how great Sammy Watkins was, and the first thing I thought to myself is, there's no way we're picking Sammy Watkins. That's what I thought. There's no way the Browns are going to take Sammy Watkins because Ray Farmer talked him up. And all he's trying to do is gas the price up for Sammy and hope that either St. Louis or Jacksonville picks him. Now, to your point about system before, now Kyle Shanahan is the Browns' new offensive coordinator, of course, and he came from the Redskins where he was Robert Griffin III's coordinator. And Robert Griffin obviously is a very mobile quarterback. Now, the Shanahans did some really questionable stuff, and that's the nicest way I could say it. They did a lot of questionable stuff with RG3, like sending him out on fly patterns and stuff and throwing him the ball. They actually did that in a game, and he got smacked. I'm like, these guys are morons. But now they're coaching my team, right? Now Kyle Shanahan's coaching my team, so we need to think about what kind of system he's going to bring. And he had a pretty successful system there when Robert Griffin was healthy with him being a mobile quarterback. And that's why some believe that Johnny Manziel might be a great fit for Cleveland because he's mobile. And he's probably more mobile than Teddy Bridgewater. Now, I don't think Teddy's not mobile. He's not a statue back there. But I think that Johnny is more mobile. But again, in your scenario, he's already off the board. So now we're working with Bridgewater. We're looking at Blake Bortles. We're looking at possibly Derek Carr. The Browns have been linked to Derek Carr, so much so that there's rumors that the Browns would even sign David Carr, his washed-up older brother. And I tweeted at Scarface, the rapper from Houston. Y'all love Scarface. I love Scarface. Face Mob is one of my favorite rappers. I tweeted at him one day when he was talking about the draft because he's a Houston Texans fan coming out of Houston. And he said, no more cars. That's exactly what he told me. So, I mean, I'm a little bit skittish on Derek Carr, but Derek Carr put up insane numbers at Fresno State. I mean, we're talking like off the chart, like Tim Couch numbers at Kentucky, like some of the highest, you know, passing statistical, like we're talking like 5,000 yards and 40 touchdown passes, like that kind of stuff. So I think Derek Carr could be, I think he's more of your traditional pocket passer, and I think he could be very good. But I'm with you 110%. Teddy Bridgewater, he's the most accurate passer in this draft, and I watched him all season. I watched him a little bit last year, but you know, the buzz came after the bowl game where he destroyed Florida, and then he came out this year, and I paid special attention to him all year, and he is the most accurate passer in this draft. I cannot stress that enough, and I agree with you that that's even more important than arm strength. Not to belittle arm strength, but accuracy is king in decision making. That trumps everything else outside of, as far as tangibles are concerned. And so when you're looking at Teddy, I think he's the most accurate passer. If you look at his YouTube highlights, I mean, he's passing in the very, very tight windows. Whereas you look at somebody like Blake Bortles YouTube highlights, quarterback out of Central Florida, I believe. And he's throwing the receivers that are wide open on every play. Now, I know that's just a highlight reel and it's not the full game, but it's kind of like, if these are his best throws and he's throwing to guys that are running 5 yards open by themselves, then how great is he really? Because Teddy Bridgewater's threading the needle on third and long, you know what I'm saying? So I think Bridgewater is a great pick there. But and I'm going to ask you one other thing about the Browns before we move off of them. What are your thoughts on the Browns at 26? Because obviously the Browns made the Trent Richardson deal midseason. Under your scenario, they're taking Teddy Bridgewater. So we're going to take a quick detour on the draft, and we're going to jump to 26. What do the Browns do at 26?
Now, this one is particularly difficult, but not so much in the sense of who they're going to take, but they have a lot of options that they can go with at 26. I'm not the fan of them trying to trade up, and which is one another reason why I want to pick Bridgewater at 4, because I personally don't think that these quarterbacks, despite all the negativity that they've had on them, they're going to get past, I would say, like the top 13. I think most of these guys, I think the only one who has a chance to drop will be, well, not necessarily drop, that will still be around in the 20s will be Derek Carr, and I think he's going to be taken by Arizona personally. But from my standpoint, at 26, they can go a number of different ways. They can go wide receiver, which they definitely could use another young wide receiver to go with Josh Gordon in the start lineup. I can see them going guard because they, as much hell as Mitchell Schwartz has been under, I think he's played very well. I think he's been a victim of poor guard play. The guy who's standing next to him was either Sean LaValle or O'Neal Cousins or Jason or Pinkston. You know, these guys are pretty much bums for the most part. They should and he's overcompensating because of how bad they are. On the flip side, John Greco, he's got a Hall of Famer on one side and Joe Thomas and Alex Mack, who's right now the highest paid center and probably the best center in football on the other side. I don't think he played that well personally, but he gets a pass because he's playing next to basically, you know, two Pro Bowlers and one in particular, a Hall of Fame tackle. So they could go guard there. And I think if you put a good guard next to Mitchell Schwartz, you'll see a difference and improvement on the entire offensive line altogether. So I could look at that. Or I can look at corner because on the opposite side of Joe Hayden, you got, you know, Buster Skrine, who's a nickelback, and you got a whole bunch of, you know, young guys, Leon McFadden, and all these other guys who are really not ready to be starters yet, or maybe not even starters at all. They mean to me, Leon McFadden is a good fourth corner. He's never going to be a guy that's going to start on this team. So for me at those positions are pretty much key. But for this particular draft, I'm looking at inside linebacker. Inside linebacker in particular with Craig Robertson. Craig Robertson, to me, had a horrible season, especially when he was asked to cover tight ends and running backs out the backfield. So for me, if he's there, I'm looking at C.J. Mosley at 26 because he pretty much rounds out the defense. The defense in particular is pretty solid. And you can pick the cornerback position and the middle linebacker position in the 3-4 are two big areas that they need to strengthen up. And if I can get one of those two, one of these corners like a Darquez Dennard or a Kyle Fuller who may happen to be there, or in this case and for this particular draft, C.J. Mosley, and I put him next to Carlos Dansby, then my linebacking core is set. I'm ready to get after the quarterback. And I know that C.J. Mosley, he can guard tight ends, he can guard running backs, he can do pretty much everything in coverage, and he can rush the passer. So for me, if he's there, I'm taking C.J. Mosley at 26.
And real quick to piggyback off of that thought, I agree with you that that the Browns could use CJ Mosley at 26. I don't know if he's going to be there, and so obviously that's a big caveat to that. But I do believe that he's from Alabama, so obviously he's played in big time college football, played in a lot of big games. Can really cover the field pretty much, you know, sideline to sideline. He's a really talented linebacker, and so if he's there, if in the off chance that he's there somehow, I think that the Browns would run to the podium to go ahead and pick him. And I'm glad you mentioned Kyle Fuller as far as a corner, as opposed to Bradley Roby out of Ohio State, who I'm not particularly fond of, because it was torch time when Bradley Roby was in the game last season. He had a pretty good junior year, I think, but senior year or this past year, whatever, I don't know if he's a sophomore or junior, but this past season was not his best work. And so Bradley Roby, man, and he's gotten into some questionable stuff off the field, but that was never confirmed, so we won't get into all that. But you know, I would probably go Kyle Fuller out of Virginia Tech, because Virginia Tech is a cornerback factory, and they just crank him out up there. So I don't know if Teddy Bridgewater would be available at 26. I don't know if Derek Carr would be available at 26. I actually I think Derek Carr will be picked 20th by the Cardinals. I totally agree with that. But yeah, if in the off chance that the Browns could, in a perfect world, if Teddy were to slide for whatever reason and slide down to 26, I think that's obviously best case scenario for the Browns, and then they could use that 4 pick on Sammy Watkins or somebody. But you know, that's best case scenario. I'm with you. I take the guy that I want. I take Bridgewater at 4 if this is the layout of the draft. And then like you said, linebacker, corner, guard, these are all areas of need for the Browns, and they can definitely, and the Browns have another pick at the top of the second round, and then two more in the third round. So the Cleveland Browns may not be far off, and I never thought I would say that. But let's jump to the 5th pick really quick, and we're running short on time, but let's talk about the Oakland Raiders. The Raiders, they got rid of Terrell Pryor. They still don't have a quarterback. They haven't had a quarterback since Rich Gannon, I don't think, off the top of my head. They had Culpepper for like a year, I think. He was halfway decent. And last year they were starting Terrell Pryor and Matt McGloin, I think the kid from Penn State. They went out and got Matt Schaub from the Texans. Houston let him go, and Oakland picked him up, so he's the presumed starter there. But they're in desperate need of a quarterback. They are in their receiving core is a little bit shaky. Their running backs are pretty decent. They got Maurice Jones-Drew. They picked him up from Jacksonville, so he's back there with Darren McFadden now. They lost their other running back, Jennings. I think he went to the Giants, if I'm not mistaken. But so you got DMC, and you got MJD, and then you have a receiving core that doesn't really have a lot of names on it. What's the one kid's name? They had the one kid. His name escapes me, and he was on my fantasy team last year, and he kicked butt. But they had the speedy guy. I can't think of his name. Maybe you can help me out here, Mark. But they could use help at receiver. But they could use help on defense as well. I mean, the Raiders are they have not been a very good football team for the last several years. So if you're running the Raiders, Al Davis is no longer with us, so he's not going to force you to take the quarterback with the strongest arm or the receiver who runs the fastest 40 time. So who do you pick if you're running the Raiders?
If I'm the Raiders and I'm looking at this, I mean, it's real simple. I mean, I think the Matt Schaub signing was crucial. Because this way, it forces them not to have to go and draft a quarterback. And I'm not as high on Blake Bortles as others, just because I don't think he's ready to start on any NFL team. I think the team that drafts him, he's going to have to sit a year just so he can get adjusted to the NFL game. There's some issues with his footwork and accuracy on certain things that he needs to correct. And so I'm not sold on getting a quarterback. There's really not a quarterback that you need to take there. And I think the person, I don't know if it was Lewis Murphy. I don't know who the wide receiver was for Oakland. I think he was trying to talk about. I'm trying to think of him. I know it was him. I think it was Denarius Moore.
That's it.
Streeter. Yeah, Denarius Moore. Yeah, Denarius Moore. So, you know, they are in a desperate need at wide receiver. And if Sammy Watkins happens to fall in their lap at 5, they will be running to the podium to take him. And so in my particular draft, if I'm Oakland and the board falls the way it has, I'm running to the podium and I'm getting Sammy Watkins The thing I love about Sammy Watkins, and I talk with my brother about this, he probably has told you about this too. What I love about Sammy Watkins the most is, regardless of the fact that he's not, you know, 6'4", all of a sudden now 6'3" and 6'4" wide receivers are in vogue now. He's a little over 6 feet tall, but he plays the game violently. I love that from my receiver. I mean, he fights for every ball. He fights for every yard. And for me, with the ball in his hands after the catch, he is absolutely electric. To me, if I could get a quarterback at that position, I'd be looking at Sammy Watkins all day, just because I know what he can bring to the table. And he reminds me of a faster Anquan Boldin, because Anquan Boldin plays the game violently. That's why what I've always loved about him as a football player. And you put speed with Anquan Boldin, and you get Sammy Watkins, in my opinion. Sammy Watkins, to me, is the pick at number 5, and they will be running to the podium if after the Browns draft Teddy Bridgewater, they're running to the podium and they're just giving their car right up there, right then and there, because that's the type of guy that they need on that receiving core. And he's the perfect silver and black guy, honestly. If you look at it, his play dictates that he's a silver and black guy.
Yeah, that's all dead on. A couple things I wanted to point out real quick. And again, I do want to say that we're short on time, so I'm going to have to speed this along. But Watkins, two questions. One, Sammy Watkins, is he head and shoulders above the other receivers in this class? Because there's a lot of good receivers in this class, and everything that you said about him was true. But my only concern about any team taking him in the top 5, not to say that they shouldn't do it, but is Sammy Watkins that much better than Mike Evans? Is Sammy Watkins that much better than the rest of the receivers in this class to the point that we shouldn't, you know, we should spend our highest pick on him? And then the other point that I want to make, this isn't really a question, but more so just co-signing on what you said about Blake Bortles. The word is that he didn't have any pro-style plays in his offense at Central Florida. So he's going to have to learn, as you said. So he may have to sit a year. I like his size, but the one thing, and this is just something that I've talked with people about, and this is his own, you know, my own thing inside my own dome that I've just, it racks my brain. I can't trust a guy with the name Blake Bortles. I need a cool name at quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater that's kind of a cool name. Johnny Manziel, that's a cool name with an even more dope nickname. Peyton Manning is a pretty cool name. Drew Brees is a really cool name. Drew Bledsoe is a cool name. Brett Favre is a cool name. John Elway is a cool name. Tom Brady is a cool name. That's an All-American name. Blake Bortles, I'm not, you know what I'm saying? What kind of a name is, and this sounds really mean, but what kind of a name is Blake Bortles? I'm not entrusting my franchise to Blake Bortles.
I'm not trusting my franchise to Blake Bortles either. And you're right about the whole name. I mean, his girlfriend gets more notoriety than he does, okay? That to me, well, yeah, Feels danger, okay? So I love his size. I love his ability, per se, because of how big he is. He's a perfect, like, AFC North type of quarterback to me. But there's so many different things that's raw about him, and he may never even develop these things. I mean, you're taking the chance that if he sits a year and a half, or whatever, and you bring him in, that he's going to learn all these things. I don't know if he is or not. I mean, he's a crapshoot as much as anything. And to speak on that, that's what I have him going to. I have him going to the Buccaneers actually at 7, because he doesn't have to start. He can sit. He can sit a year. There's no pressure to push him out there, and I think he's back in Florida where he belongs. He don't have to go anywhere. I think that helps him out. But on the flip side about Sammy Watkins, I'm glad you asked that question. Personally, I don't think there's that big of a gap between him and Mike Evans, but I think those two are clearly the top receivers in this draft. Now, you have to decide as a franchise what you want to do. What type of receiver do you want? Because wide receiver by far is the deepest area in this draft. So you have all kinds of receivers. You have your speed wide receivers like Marquise Lee from USC, Brandon Cooks from Oregon State. You have your big physical guys like Mike Evans, your Kelvin Benjamins. You have You have your Allen Robinsons from Penn State. You got your slim, your size but slim guys like Jordan Matthews from Vanderbilt. You know, those type of dudes. But Sammy Watkins is like a combination of all those things. The only thing he lacks is the height, but he sniffs the end zone. I think that's what makes him special, because every time he gets the ball, he has the ability to take it to the house. And I think that's rare, because he not only can run over you, he can run right by you. He'll catch anything in his path. He'll outjump you. He'll do all the things that's necessary for a receiver. And I think if the only other wide receiver I would even consider drafting other than Sammy Watkins that high would be Mike Evans, because of what he brings to the table. Because he's a physical guy. He can get up vertically. He's a good red zone type of wide receiver, that type of thing. But you have to decide as a franchise what type of receiver you're looking for. And I think it's the intangibles, the fact that he plays violently. I think that's what sets him apart from everybody else. He just wants it more. You know what I'm saying? I think that's what separates him and makes him the top receiver in this draft. But the gap is not that big. And if you can afford to wait on somebody like that, if you're Oakland, if you want to take like a Khalil Mack at five, and you want to strengthen up your defense, I mean, that's by all means, that's the way you want to go. That's cool. But from my standpoint, you need somebody who can help infuse, just like from Johnny Football, from a quarterback standpoint, you need somebody who can infuse some lightning on offense. They really don't have too many playmakers. And he is the quintessential playmaker that's coming out in this draft that's not a quarterback. So for me, that's why I would take him.
A couple other things I want to wrap up real quick. Just want to get your thoughts on. Question one. Do running backs have any value anymore? I mean, if you're a GM, do you value the running back position at all?
I think you have to, and that's a good question. I don't think at this particular time, and it goes in cycles. I think at some point when somebody drafts a couple of running backs that are relatively high, so to speak, and they end up being successful, then the tide will turn. But you're in a passing league now, and the value of the running back has diminished so drastically over the last few years, and particularly the fact that if you get into a particular like a zone blocking scheme, like Denver used to, or any of the Shanahan's run, you don't have to have the pressure of drafting a running back in the first or second or even third round for that matter. I think it's a necessary evil. People tend to forget, especially in some of these cold weather cities, when winds are blowing and they're not in domes, and you have to get yardage. You're going to have to be able to run the football. It's imperative to do so. Green Bay figured that out. That's why they drafted Eddie Lacy. You have to be able to run the football in some of these cold weather stadiums, because you're not going to be able to throw the ball 50, 55 times a game. And plus, you make yourself one-dimensional. So there's value to it, but it's not the value that it used to be. So if you can find a good running back in the second or the third round or maybe even later, that's fantastic, because there are some good running backs in this draft class. But, you know, I don't think it's going to be a long time before somebody takes the chance on drafting a running back in the first round. You know, Trent Richardson, you know, pretty much fall off the face of the earth after he was picked, you know, third overall, you know, when he came out, and the Browns actually traded up one spot to get him. You won't see that happen for a while. You know, the best running back is Carlos Hyde. I don't see him going until the second round. So I think that's going to be the trend for a while until they start changing the way that the game is played. I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. So.
All right. Well, there you have it. And, you know, we'll recap again. The first ever Hip Hop Sports Report 2014 mock draft. Mark Hicks with his five picks based on if he were running the teams. Houston Texans number one, Jadeveon Clowney. Jake Matthews number two to the St. Louis Rams. Johnny Manziel number three to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Teddy Bridgewater number four to the Cleveland Browns. Sammy Watkins number five to the Oakland Raiders. And also CJ Mosley to the Browns at 26. Lord willing. And it sounds like, Mark, you really put a premium on, again, either guys who can protect your quarterback, guys who attack the quarterback, or the quarterback. That's kind of who you would rather invest a high pick on. It sounds like. I could be wrong. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But is that right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's the key. I mean, if you're drafting that high, to me, those are the areas that you will want to target as a GM. If either quarterback, the guy who can put the pressure on, it's all about the quarterback. Either the quarterback himself, the people that put pressure on the quarterback, or the people that's blocking for the quarterback. If I'm taking in somebody in top five, that's what I would do first and foremost.
And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Mark, for joining us this evening on the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. We are out of time, but we're going to have you back for the NBA edition of the Mark Draft. I think that's in order. The NFL Draft is this Thursday, and we will be watching, of course. And thank you for joining us this evening. Hit us on the website, hiphopsportsreport.com, or on Twitter at HHSReport. And also remember to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Mark, you can be found on Twitter as well at Remark1972, correct?
That is correct.
All right, there you go. We need some more followers for my man Mark, because he is a brilliant tactical football mind, and he could mop the floor with any of these GMs in the NFL. You know what I'm saying? Thank you very much for joining us, Mark. Thank you all for listening. We out here, y'all. Peace. Cause when my coat come in, they gotta use the scale that they weigh the whales with. Carlson's on a Jeep, Bugatti made the prototype. Hope you get the picture, but you just can't photo light. Determined niggas make it, kicking down the door, and we burning niggas naked. The house costs a million, sitting on the beach, and the only thing I know, if it's furnished, I'ma take it. My bathtub lift up, my walls do a 360. We got the shit that the government got. Talking money, then you rubbing the spot. Real niggas say that they be wild. We on the Cayman Islands, on a yacht with our favorite albums. A bad hole in a plate of salmon, smoking and drinking. Nigga, is you thinking that our fate is violent? I love my nigga for the fact that he real, and the body on the back of his square. What? And if you facing capital pun, pass me a gun, and I'ma give you time to run while I rapidly peel. We gon' make it. We gon' make it. We gon' make it.